Hey there, land lovers. Welcome to the Captain Grinsky Show. Come on board for the trip of a lifetime on the Sea of Life. Join Captain Grinsky and enjoy some homespun philosophy as Captain Grinsky uses a microphone to bring you into the weird, wonderful world inside his head. Enjoy the trip, me arties. And here at the helm, Captain Grinsky.
Hello there, land lovers. I'm back. Yes, I was away last week. I left the good vice captain. Well, captain of vice, nothing. That's not a euphemism, by the way. He was the vice captain, if you know what I mean. Almost like a first mate. Out there in America at the helm, Roberto did a great job steering the little ship down the big, big, big midway, you know, the big river. So we go out into the channel and around the UK. But I'm back. I'm back with a vengeance. And tonight I've got some very interesting guests. I've got a little challenge I've got to take up with Roberto. I've got a radio operator here with me, the Mike Davis, the psychic medium, award-winning international, obviously. But let's kick off with a band, which is my last week as being Band of the Month, because next month is a different month. But right now we're going to kick off with a great little track, which is by a band who used to be Split Ends and then became Crowded House. It's a great version by Missy Higgins.
Down.
we have it then. That was it. That was Split Enz with... Well, it wasn't Split Enz. It was a Split Enz song from the Friends of the album, I think 1978, written by Tim Finn. And that was a lady called Missy Higgins, an Australian lady. It was very, very good. And so that was a great version because Tim Finn sang along with her on that version. It's not like the original. It's a little bit more rocky than the original. Anyway, here we are, back on track, back on the old, the good ship, the Sea of Life, going down the east coast of the United Kingdom. I can see Cromer, the lights from Cromer on my right as I'm going down there. And those big oil wells burst in flame into the sky as I head for the port of Rotterdam for breakfast. I'll get there in the morning. I'll be a brekkie. I'll come back because there's not much to do in Rotterdam. It's a big port, mind, Europort, biggest port in Europe. Just want to give that information. And while I'm here, I wanted to push my little Facebook page, which is the Captain Quincy Radio Show. If you check that out on Facebook, you'll see some interesting photographs of some of the other larger ships I used to work on years ago. It's a nice ship there called the Arcadia in Alaska. There's another one called the Canberra, another one called the Himalaya, or the Himalaya, if you talk with a local accent. And I was on those ships for years. You know, plodding around the world. There's some great shots. There's one there in a place called Pango Pango in the South Pacific, which is spelled P-A-G-O, Pago, but you always put the N in front. When you speak it in Samoan, you speak with an N in front, so it becomes Pango Pango. Anyway, I'm now going to play a song by a guy called John Waite. And, you know, it's a great song. And it's a bit of a thumper. It's a lovely song about people who have some sort of long-distance love affair on the old-fashioned telephone before we had the Skypes and the Internet. The old World Wide Web wasn't about then. And this is a song by Johnny Boy, and it's called, it's a classic. It's called Missing You. Go on, John. Hit it, son.
I always catch my breath, and I'm still
Nashville fade, I'm not too sure, but that was a bit of a quick fade. Anyway, I can't hear myself in my headphones too good. As long as you, listener, dear listener, can hear me, that's okay. What I'm going to do as well tonight, I'm going to play a couple of songs tonight that, well, obviously I always play songs that the good captain myself has been involved in either writing or playing on or something or both. And the next song I'm going to play is actually going to be a song written by a friend of mine who had some success in the 1970s, and he had a band called Racing Cars, and they had a big hit called They Shoot Horses, Don't They? From the film, not from the film, but inspired by the film of the same name, which was about a dance competition where people actually went round in circles till they dropped, and the last person on is the winner. Anyway, this is a guy called Morty. He just likes to use his first name, Morty. We recorded this in my in one of my little cabins on the good ship, Sea of Life. A bit of a rocker. I'm playing the drums and keyboards, and a friend of mine is playing the guitars, and Morty is singing, and we're all having a bit of a bash. It's a song called After All This Time, and this is a guy called Morty. Great. Yeah, that was young Morty having a bit of a bash there. What a great singer. What a great, great singer that lad is. And I'll be playing another one of our songs with Morty a little bit later on when our guest comes on. So that's a that's an interesting little surprise, I think, because I haven't played this track for a long time. But I do believe it's all going to work. So anyway, onwards and upwards and across the sea we go. I'm looking at the night sky at the moment, and I can see Cassiopeia up there. A traditional, a well-known classic W-shaped constellation, obviously, in the sky. And being in the northern hemisphere, obviously, I can see the North Star. Easy to find. You just follow the pointers in the old Great Bear. Or, as they say in America, the Big Dipper. But they would, wouldn't they? Because they don't understand Great Bear. Ursula Major, to give it the Latin, I think. I'm guessing. I'm not a bad guesser. I mean, obviously, if I can navigate my way around the world single-handed in my craft, without any maps or anything, you know, by looking at them stars. Obviously, I'm a clever chap, so if I want to say it's Ursa Major, it's Ursa Major, the Great Bear. Castor and Pollux, I wasn't swearing, that's the name of the two stars. Maybe not in that constellation, I think they're in Orion, I don't know. But maybe I'll have a look at a book, because we don't have Google on the ship, obviously, just the old-fashioned books on the ship. Anyway, I've got a special guest coming on very, very shortly. A couple of guests, actually. Obviously, the Robert, the producer, who likes to come on every show now. He likes to put two of his own little songs into the show. I don't mind doing it with him because, obviously, he's American, you know, and good choice in music, and I love listening to the tracks. So we'll do another song, I think. And then I think I'll get Roberto, the producer, on. So let's just do one more song. This is let's keep it in an American flavor. This is an uplifting song. I think this song is a really great song, even though it's been done two versions. The lady in question is a country singer. She won the Country Singer of the Year award a couple of years ago, and she did a crossover hit with this song, which was a great mix, a dance mix. But all the country guys went, hang on, she's going commercial, she's copping out, that's not country. Doesn't really matter though, it's a great song. And it's a song called, it's Leanne Womack. Was brilliant, and it's a song called I Hope You Dance. Hope you like it.
I hope you
Probably answer that question for me sometime during the show. But first of all, I'm going to bring him on. Roberto, are you there?
Yes, I am there, Captain. How was your vacation?
My vacation was very good. I was down in the Wild West of Wales with Mike Davis, the international award-winning psychic medium.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It was a bit of a lively night, I have to say. There were about 180 women in there.
Oh, then he was definitely a happy man.
Well, he was happy man in the early part of the evening, but then we had a few drinks by the end of the evening. It was a very difficult time. He was on a rough sea there.
Oh.
Because they were all, you know, I mean, it's difficult. You're up there in front of 180 women, and you have to contact the spirit world and try and come through with something that
keep his sea legs to boot, right?
His sea legs to boot. He was lucky I was there because, you know, I used to do, you know, when I was a security guard for the French Navy back in my other life in Napoleonic, I needed to bash a few people over the head, you know. I wouldn't do it anymore because I've learned my lessons now. I don't have to go back to that. But there were one or two ladies there who needed a bit of, you know, control, I have to say. When they were opening the third bottle of wine on that table in the corner, I knew there was going to be a lively, lively evening. But it went well,
good.
Raised £1,500 for the charity. It was a children's charity called Latch.
Wow.
It was a great charity for young people, young kids, you know, with cancer in South Wales. And so good for Mike, £1,500 was raised for the charity. And our choir went down, one of the choirs I work with, we went down and we sang a few songs. And so the young people learned the meaning of the word apathy.
Okay.
So you have to look that up in a dictionary because nobody took any notice of them whatsoever. They only did. The first three rows thought the choir were great, but the ladies at the back with the bottles of wine just wanted a drink. But we got on.
I kept the ship on course like you wanted me to.
Checking on the podcast, and you did keep the ship on a fairly straight course. on good music. That's the main thing about it.
Good.
Now then, you did send me this little challenge on the radio last week, Roberto.
Yes, I did. Were you able to figure out who...
I'm a big fan of that particular person, if it's the one I'm thinking of, unless, of course, you know, you've done a double whammy and caught me out. What I'm going to do, I'm going to play you a song now, okay?
Yes,
and this might let you know whether or not I know the answer to last week's question. So I'll play this track, and when we get to the end of it, I'll give you a little bit of time because you did bet me $25.
That's right.
You did, didn't you? And
if you listen closely, you owe me the money because I know you didn't get it, but I don't owe you anything.
I did get it. I got it straight away. And, you know, I'll just play this track. Right, at the end of this track, Robert, you tell me whether this is a clue, whether I'm lukewarm or red hot on my answer.
All right.
Listen, it's okay. Here's a track you're going to like.
All right, thank you.
When this old world starts getting me down and people are just too much for me to face, I'll climb way up to the top of the stairs and all my cares just drift right into space.
James Taylor, JT himself, Carol King's song called Up on the Roof. Now then, Robert, what was the song you tried to catch me on last week?
Oh, what was the song? What was the song? I bet you don't even remember the name of it.
It was called Handyman, Robert.
By
yes, that was. Taylor, the same man himself.
You hit it. You got it.
By $25, it was written by Jimmy Jones and Otis Blackwell. Jimmy Jones had a hit with it in the early 60s. And the band he was in had a hit with it before that. But Jimmy Jones had a big hit with it. It was done much quicker than James Taylor's version, obviously. And Otis Blackwell, who died a couple of years ago, he was a great songwriter. And he wrote, like, Return to Sender for Elvis Presley. And he wrote a song with Elvis. And Elvis got the credit because he didn't like a couple of words that Otis had written. And Elvis changed a couple of words, as people used to do in those days, so they could get half the royalties. Very clever. I know people who changed one word of a song just to get half the royalties. And you think, how many...
What's that?
Songs that they sold, just changing one word of a song, brought this thousands and thousands of dots. Yeah. Yes, right, Robert, right. So is that okay? I got it right?
You won.
Okay.
I'm going to get you one of these days. I'm going to stump you.
You will play me some probably obscure track from America, which I don't know.
Well, actually, normally I usually, we have our, like I said, we have a real special guest coming up here after I do my song. I'm going to do one song this week, Captain, because the song I'm going to play is actually a little bit lengthy one. It's not too long, but it's by a performer that I'm sure you can appreciate. And it's actually a live version of the song. Just to give you a little bit of a kind of background, I remember being at a concert. I didn't want to go to this show, but unfortunately my sister twisted my arm saying, she didn't have anybody to go with. At that time, when I was younger, I was into a different, music area. I was just like, oh my God, I don't want to go see this guy. But she twisted my arm and I went with her, and I'm really glad I did. Because I'll tell you, this guy is incredible.
I was going to just say, I admire the way that you managed to get your family in on the show.
I'm sorry.
Just you got your wife in last week. We got the dog. We get the dog in. Come on. You can get him in. Come on.
Yeah, get his little slobbery butt in there.
On time, because I love listening to you, because you've obviously seen a lot of live shows, haven't you?
Yes.
You've gone and seen lots of live
shows. As a matter of fact, I used to, when I was younger, I used to really love concerts. And believe it or not, when older I got, I wanted to be a part of that scene. And actually, I went to school to become a production engineer. I worked in sound studios. I worked at a radio station. And then I got to travel on tour with a lot of different bands. So I've seen a whole lot of concerts. And I'll tell you, I wish I could have worked for this guy, because it would have been something to remember. So whenever you're ready, I can start the song.
I was just going to say, obviously, I'm not in that fortunate position, because I didn't get to see a lot of concerts, because obviously I was too busy performing in concerts, Robert.
I know, that's awesome.
If you just got 22 years of...
But if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't have sounded.
I know, I wouldn't. I mean, you can tell me this guy now, is it a guy or a girl?
It's a guy.
Okay, and is he a solo performer or...
Solo.
Solo. Is he a big name in the UK?
I'd say he is. I really, to be honest with you, you and I have never talked about this guy.
It's not Alice Cooper, is it?
No.
Okay, I'm only saying that because it was a full page article on Alice Cooper today in the national newspaper over here.
Right. I'm sure once you hear him sing, and you know the song. Like I said, I'm just going to set the scene for you. I remember this song at the concert, and it's what made me fall in love with the guy. So here we go with Billy Joel.
Steam ahead, Billy Joel.
Thank you.
There you go.
Well, that was a classic, I got to say, Robert.
I know it was a little bit raw, but, you know, I just wanted to give you that atmosphere. That atmosphere.
I used to work in the piano bar.
Really?
For a couple of years. And we used to go in Spain. That was the most requested song ever in a piano bar. You know that somebody every night is going to come up and ask, can you play Billy Joel's Piano Man? It's one of those songs. Because he wrote it. Well, he was in a piano bar, and it describes, you know, like the guy behind the bar, you know, it's great. It does tell you what happens to these guys in piano bars. There's lots of guys there who work behind the bar, but really they want to be film stars, you know.
That's right.
And, you know, it's that. I thought you were going to play songs from an Italian restaurant. That's a long song, I thought.
The reason why the long version of the live version is really good is because it really shows how everybody knows that song.
Yeah,
just like you were just saying, it's like the most requested song. I mean, did you hear the audience? It was just like...
Yeah. I was saying to Mike, you know, that's Mike, the international award-winning psychic, who's next to me in the at the helm here. And I was saying it's a great feeling to write a song and then everybody in the audience knows all the words and can sing you a song back to you.
Mm-hmm.
How good is that?
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Billy Joel, apart from the fact that when he went into his classical, I'm going to be a classical piano player... you know, part of his life, which didn't do anything for me at all. But there's a great British television show called The Old Grey Whistle Test, and Billy Joel was on that when he was really, really young, stoned. You know, his eyes are in another world. Fantastic! What a great singer songwriter. And
absolutely.
And 10 for that choice, Robert. So I do believe you have a guest.
Yes, I do. I tell you, I met this woman. Some months back, and she came to me, and I interviewed her on my radio show, and since then I've interviewed her a couple times, and I'll tell you, this woman is an author of It's a Fine Line, and she's amazing. Her story is amazing, to be honest with you there, Captain. This book is a memoir, and I'll tell you, I read the book. My wife has read the book. My sister's book group has read the book. And they all come back with the same thing. It's just, wow. So, I'd like to introduce you to her. Teresa, are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Hello, Teresa.
Thank you.
It's the captain here. Can you hear me?
I can, Captain.
Oh, good girl. See, you know your place, Captain, already.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And you are from our country, UK.
I am UK, yeah, in Bristol.
Bristol, okay, just over the bridge from where we are.
Not far.
Well, there's two bridges now, isn't there? There's a new Severn Bridge, because the Severn, Stuart, for people in America who don't know, sort of separates the lower end of England from Wales, you know. So we're on the one side of the water, and you're on the other side.
Is this true?
True, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, so Robert... explained about the book, but I mean, obviously, it would be great if you could tell us about the book and your journey to get that book published.
Okay, are you going, Robert, me, or you or me first?
You go first.
Okay. The book, as Robert rightly said before, There's a Fine Line. It's a memoir. It's the story of my life. My life has been a bit rocky, to say the least. It involves, from front cover to back cover, really abuse. Abuse as a child, abuse as an adult, an accident where I was ill, health retired, where I could no longer work, and my time within mental health care, trying to heal the wounds that all of that has caused. In the early part of the book, also a bit there about my mother. She had a very traumatic life with my real father, who was killed when I was 3. He was an alcoholic, violent man. You know, I was a month early because he threw booze into her stomach. So it's not a really pretty story, but it's one that needed to be written. It's one that therapeutically helped me heal, which is the major thing out there, you know, and the reason why I wrote the book. I wrote the book to start with because takes a long time within mental health care to find somebody that you gel with, i.e. psychiatrist, psychologist, some, you know, it's like everything else in life. You meet somebody, you either get on well with them, you know, you can interact or you can't. Mm-hmm. No different in mental health. So I met this one lady that after a few years, 3 or 4 years, that happened for me. And she said to me one day, between sessions, you know, if I can't get the telephone, then why don't you just write down how you feel as a purging exercise type sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then when we get back together, we have session and we'll discuss it. And I did this for a couple of weeks. And suddenly I realized it wasn't random words anymore. I was forming some sentences and paragraphs becoming be apparent. And I sort of stopped one day and thought, you know, this is really helping me. And I could help others. And that's the day I stopped. I went right back to the beginning and I wrote it as a book. And to be really honest with you, throughout the writing of the book, I always felt that the people out there that had gone through similar experiences to myself were behind me, sort of standing behind my shoulder, really helping me write it, you know, because I was going back into the lion's den. It was difficult. I would sometimes write for 12 hours. Sometimes I would get to part of the book that was very painful for me, and I couldn't write for 2 weeks. You know, I just would sit down and try to type, and it just wasn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the book, I had, I would say, 99% healed myself through the process. Now my mission, my passion, is to help others. You know, there's so many people out there with their own demons that need a helping hand to sort of get to the end of that journey, because there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Sometimes it looks a long way away, you know, but baby steps become strides, mountains become hills, and you just got to find the strength out there to go for it. And that's my passion now. I do a lot of interviews. I've had some articles put in newspapers regarding the same sort of issue I'm talking about here. And it's just something that now has become something very, very important to me.
You know, when you were writing the book, were you looking to find another book that could help you? You know what I mean? Were there any books out there, say, that could help you? I mean, like, your book is written because it obviously is cathartic and you've got through it all and it's great. But were there any other books out there that... that when you were looking, when you were searching, you know, to help yourself and that, apart from, you know, psychological textbooks or anything, was there an uplifting book that you ever come across that you thought, oh, well, you know, I relate to that?
The honest answer is no. I never read anything like that before. I didn't really read an awful lot. I read more now because I've written, and it becomes something very different. But no, the book was... It wasn't an inspiration from anything that I'd read or anything like that. It wasn't even an inspiration from me. I never thought of myself as an author. It was a process of elimination, how I could heal me. And it came on me, you know, in a place I didn't think it would arrive, you know, because I wasn't looking for it there. But, you know, luckily for me, that's how it happened. And I've been able to move on with my life. And that's what I'm trying to do for others, help them too.
So is the story uplifting? You know, do you feel that's, you know, because you've written it and stuff, and apart from the fact you went through all that stuff, which was terrible, you know, obviously terrible, but now is it an uplifting? Is the message of the book, you know, yes, you can, I've done this, you can do it as well, you know, is it an uplifting book? Do you think it gives hope to people who read it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I don't think the story is uplifting because it's a journey of, you know, of pure hell, really, for me. But for anyone who's been in a situation like I was, it is uplifting because if they read this book and they realize exactly what I've gone through, and some of this stuff is sort of off the Richter scale. One day, my stepfather actually cut his finger off and delivered it to my house in a white hanky as an apology for what he'd done to me. You know, so it's a bit out there. You know, when I first found a publisher, there was three in the end that wanted to take my book. They asked me if it's fiction, and it isn't, it's fact. You know, it was my life. But for somebody sort of, I guess you get two different audiences. You get someone who pick it up and read it and think, my God, you know, and it won't, they'll read the book, they'll be interested in the story and may discuss it down the pub. And then mm-hmm. you get the other people who have gone through similar experience to myself, because abuse is abuse in any shape or form. You know, there's just slight variations. By reading this book and seeing what I've gone through, and I'm still here, and I'm still able to write about it, for them, it is a very uplifting experience, and that's what my aim was.
I mean, bullying comes in a lot of forms, doesn't it? Just like a booster. You can have verbal bullying, which can be more hurtful than physical bullying, you know? People can say things to you, people say, oh, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never harm them. But it's not true, is it? Words
absolutely
stick.
Not, no.
Words absolutely stick.
Yeah.
They cut you up inside, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, my stepfather used to say to me, I mean, my brother explained just a while ago, my real father was a monster, really, from what I knew. I mean, he was killed when I was three, so I'm relying on what others told me as I grew. But, you know, my stepfather used to say things to me like, you're just like your real father, you know, it's you that's doing this, you're the evil person, you know, you're the bad seed, you know, it's genetic. And I went through a lot of years of my life thinking that was true, you know, I used to avoid looking in mirrors, I wouldn't have my picture taken on a camera because I really felt there was something evil emanating from me. Because they were words, as you rightly say, but they were very damaging, you know, and I really thought that it was absolutely true. I mean, I actually took a trip to my father's grave many years later, just, you know, just after he'd been stopped in my life as an adult. And I sat by his grave and sort of spoke to him, you know, why did you behave this way? You know, I went so many years thinking that I am you or you were me, you know.
That line you used there, which was, you're just like your father, mm-hmm. that line was used to me because I was adopted. Mm-hmm. And my mother never told me I was adopted. My mother who brought me up, that is. I know who my real mother is now. She was actually my auntie. And I used to go up and visit her thinking that my cousins were my cousins, but they were stepbrothers and stepsister, and my auntie was my real mother. And my mother never said to me, as far as I'm concerned, the lady who brought me up was my mother, you know, and the father who brought me up was my dad, you know. And they, you know, it's great. And no worries at all. And I've never really gone and tried to find my real father. I'm not really interested, you know. I just wish he was a rich guy who suddenly decided to find his long-lost son and chuck me all his money, but I don't think that's going to happen. But my mother used to say to me, my surname is Jones, okay? And my mother's, my real mother's name was Jones. And my dad who brought me up was my uncle. And so my mother used to say to me, whenever I did something wrong, you're a typical Jones. And I used to thought, oh, nothing of it. But what she really meant was I was my auntie's son, you know?
Right.
And so, but usually, but no malice with me. I didn't mind that. I'm a bit of a child of the world, you know. I do believe that, you know. And I do believe that your parents, whatever they are, you know, they're not your responsibility. You know, they brought you into the world, and that doesn't make them good people. And it doesn't matter, you know. You don't have to. I know this is a terrible thing I'm going to say. You don't have to love your mother, and you don't have to love your father. They brought you into the world, and if they are a nasty person, you know, love is, you know, I don't know. I don't think you have to carry those ties at all myself, I think, you know. You are what you are, and you're a person that, you know, you've come through this. So I don't know. I never felt any, you know, my auntie wasn't that type of person. She was lovely. My real mother was lovely, you know. But she never told me she was my real mother, and nobody ever did. My mother who brought me up, I found out that I was adopted by other people who knew my mother telling me, and I never ever told my mother, even when, you know, when she died, I never said, I know I'm adopted, even though she tried to tell me in her own way. She'd say, it's your cousin's handwriting, just like yours. I didn't understand what she was getting at, you know, but she was saying, sister, so, cousin. So, I mean, you've gone through hell by the sound of it, but it sounds like you've put it together now.
Yeah, it took me a long time. And I know when I first started talking to Robert, because he was one of the first people that interviewed me, and I'm sure he's there listening now, and he can see the difference in the way I actually come across as a guest. Leaps and strides.
Oh, yeah.
I tell you what, Teresa, a friend of mine, the guy I played earlier, we wrote a song once about children and about the situation you were in, and some kids are in that situation and it's not their fault and they can't get out of it, and we were going to give the song to children in need and one thing and another. We've never given it to anybody, but can I play that song now? It's all about children, and you might relate slightly to the song. Is that okay? Can I play that in?
Yeah, that'd be good.
This is a song called Children. This is for you, Teresa.
Baby, slowly growing up. if so, but so maybe. We have to give them love. Every girl and boy, give them hope and joy. Every child is special. Every child unique. Give them hope for the future. Give them a voice to speak. Every girl and every boy, give them hope and joy. It's all about them
amazing.
Sort of sums it up, really.
Uh-huh.
There, yeah. Hairs on the back of my neck was standing up a little bit there.
Yeah, I wish I could say the same, Teresa, but I haven't got any hair at all.
Yeah, I got a little goose pimples there.
Yeah, no, it's a great song. And in all fairness, the guy is a great singer as well, you know, and that's the same guy who sung the song earlier on. And we wrote the song, and we, you know, we've been in touch with Children in Need, we've done everything. They go, great song, and they never use it. And they use all these other songs. And I think, hang on, this is the ultimate, you know, this is all about children, and that's what it's all about. And,
that's
and it's
right,
about,
right,
you know, and
right.
I think, why don't they use this song? You know, not because I wrote it with the other guy, but, you know, I mean, it's such a song. It works, you know, it just nails that thing on the head. Kids need, you know, love, and they need, you know, hope, and they need comfort, you know. So that's right, why we wrote right. it, and it's one of those songs that seems to work. We wrote it, got to be 8 years ago. I recorded it when I was living on a farm, you know, in my house. So.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things, you know, something you should know about Teresa, and she has touched a lot of people. Basically, when I first met her, when I first interviewed her, she was almost to me, and I'm sure she'll appreciate this. She was almost like a very timid, very, you know, she spoke very well. She knew her book very well. And we did like a 2-hour interview with her. And I was completely blown away. And it seems like every time I meet with her, she just, it's a different flow now. And it's just beautiful. I mean, 'cause she can really dissect this book and dissect her life. And if you go on her website, it's just amazing. Her website, basically she does keep up with writing on her site, and she writes down her thoughts, or she, you know, she's really creative in that. But she brings a lot of hope to people who are in the same position that she was in. I mean, she's really, Captain, she's really a testimony of a person who got through it, and she's very strong for it now.
Well, that's good. It's an inspiration, isn't it? You know.
Yes.
I think that's important. There's another thing, again, because it's a music show, basically, but, you know, there's an event going on, Teresa, to do with the Cultural Olympics, right? And there's a kids' charity in the Rhondda Valley, where I live. And they're doing a thing in conjunction with some young people in South Africa, okay? Mm-hmm. And they've written a great storyline about it. Do you remember the film Zulu?
Yeah.
Well, Zulu obviously starred a guy from my valley, Stanley Baker, famous actor, you know. And it was all about a lot to do with the Welsh regiment in the Boer fighting the Zulu Wars. And this this children's charity, I've got a great idea, whereas they're saying that a young actor at the time, you know, it's a fictional story. This guy went out to be an actor in the film Zulu in South Africa, met South African girl, a Zulu girl, okay, which was illegal, apartheid, totally illegal, fell in love with this girl, okay, and gets found out about it. The girl gets put in prison, and the boy gets sent home to Wales, okay? Now then, they both, this is in 1966, and since that time, they've both been writing letters to each other. Now, the interesting thing is, they never sent them. Okay, they did it to as you wrote your book, they write the letters to get that, you know, pain out of the system, you see? But the twist is that the Zulu girl, without the Welsh guy knowing, had a baby, she was pregnant. So this Welsh guy has now got a daughter, right, who he doesn't know about. He's been writing these letters. He's got a daughter. Obviously, the Zulu girl never sent her letters, but they both kept writing letters to each other. And the twist of the tale is, to do with the Olympics, is that the daughter has now had a daughter, and that daughter will be representing South Africa in the Olympics in London next year.
Wow.
So the end of the story at the moment is unfinished, but it's going to be, do they find out about each other? Do they meet up again? It's a great story, right? The reason I'm saying it is because obviously I'm a musician type chap, and I was asked to get involved in writing a song about those letter writing days, okay? So I took an African type of theme. Can I play you this next song? And this is on the same theme as yourself. It's two people who, although, you know, it was a different type of hurt, but they'd been writing letters to each other without sending them. And so this song is all about that letter. It's called, it's a South African Sensenaya, which is a Zulu word. So if we can play that one for you, can I have a listen and maybe we can talk about, it's a thing about children. So that's why I'm playing it. So here's a song called Sensenaya.
kind of world are you living in? Well, love is ruled by the color of your skin. Wanted a family, a place of my own. You're in a country I can never call home.
Writing about South African situation.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, we tried to do it in an African style, obviously, because they're coming over here, you see, so they'd be coming over here to do their show.
Right.
2012. Anyway, Teresa.
Yeah.
So does any of that relate to anything? I mean, do you think that, you know, that children in general, you
I
know,
guess something from that song, really, when you said you can't leave the past behind, you can't. And I guess in my situation, I can't leave the past behind. I've had to learn to forgive my abuser because I couldn't move on with my life. But that's forgiving, it's not forgetting. And I'm sure that the situation that they were in, they had some people they needed to forgive, you know, because they actually segregated them and put them in situations. So it sort of relates that way, you know, and I'm sure that they've had to do that to move on. To give those people to move on their own lives, but it's not forgetting, is it? So I hope it's a happy ending.
I would imagine that the lady in South Africa would have had more guilt, you know, than the Welsh guy, because she knew that they had a daughter, and she never got in touch with the guy, never tried to contact him to tell him that he had a daughter, and now he's got a granddaughter. And so the guy in Wales would have just been heartbroken and carried on, you know. Neither of them knowing whether either one of them was dead, really, you know. They just had to live with that. So, you know, they went to... They went to sleep most nights, no, because they're not in touch with each other. You know. But there we are. It maybe it'll resolve itself in a good way. I don't really know. We won't know till they write the end of the play next year, you know, which is going to be the ending of the play. So there we are. But yeah, I do think that you're right. You know, you're never going to forget, are you?
No, you don't forget. You just learn to forgive because you have to for yourself. You know, you've got to learn to forgive yourself because of the implication of what you thought you've done wrong or your own involvement, whether it's you were in control of it or not. And then you have to learn to forgive your abuser, because otherwise, I've not seen my stepfather for nearly 15 years, and I don't know where he is, somewhere in Europe. But I was keeping him here in England with me until I learned to forgive what he did and to put it down and move on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what would you think you'd do if you did bump into the guy? I mean, would you, you know, how would you approach him? You know, would you...
Wow. You know, the last show I did with Robert, we had somebody on the chat there that was from the penitentiary, if you remember, Robert, and she was saying that her stepfather had used her mother and herself as a child, and she'd actually shot him. And she was actually, if you remember, Robert, she was talking to us from the chat line the last interview we did, you know, and
right,
she was
right,
saying
right.
to me.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yes, I do. I remember that. She, her father... Father abused her and her mother, and she just couldn't take it no more and just blew him away, shot him.
Yeah, absolutely. And she was sort of saying to me on the chat, did I judge her for that? And your answer to your question you've asked me a moment ago was, I don't know. I guess if I saw him now and I had a gun, maybe I'd do the same thing.
Yeah.
Maybe I wouldn't, because I've moved on to the point where I can deal with me now and my life and what happened. she hadn't reached that point. And the aim of what I'm trying to do with my website and my book is to try and help people reach that point before they have to make that, you know, decision where now her life's affected, you know, she's in prison.
People, I mean, how do they get to know about your website? How can people get onto your website? Can we give the, can we give up the web address now? Obviously, it should be great. But I mean, is there, do you have a Facebook page?
I mean, Facebook is very easy. It's just Theresa Joyce. Twitter is one word, obviously. It's called It's All in a Name. My website is TheresaJoyce.com. My publishers are Chipmunk Publishing, which is one of the biggest mental health care publishers in the world. I always give my email address out because one thing I always say is email me direct, anyone who's in a situation of abuse that needs to talk to me. It's on a one-to-one basis, and I will reply always. It takes a few days sometimes because of the volume of, but that's TheresaJoyce.Joyce@gmail.com. I'm sure if you just sort of like stick that down somewhere on your website, you know, come and have a look. I'm there to help anybody who needs it.
Okay, we could put this up on Robert's website as well or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so people can contact you and stuff like that. And, you know, obviously because it's a podcast as well, somebody might be 2 or 3 weeks when somebody's listening to the show and they feel that you touched them and they want to get in touch. So let's check it all out there as much as we can, really. You know,
yeah, we're going to be having, Teresa on GH Talk Radio here in a couple weeks. I got a young lady who actually, it's a little bit of a turnaround, who is going to be one of my guests, and I think this would be a very good show for everybody to listen to, because the girl that I'm bringing on was abused, not by her father, but by her mother.
Okay.
And she's got quite a good story to tell, so.
Okay. The thing is, you know, what would be really interesting, Teresa, if you know, not now, because this isn't, it's a music show, so it's a Captain Quincy show, and da-di-da-di-da, you know, but if, I mean, obviously, it'd be lovely to talk on a chat show, if you know, we could get the talk on a chat show, you know, Robert, you know, that would be great. I mean, we've got things to do in this show because it's a music show, and it's great to touch on these subjects, you know, but we can't really go in depth. We haven't got the time.
And thank you for coming on. I mean, really,
it would be really good to come on and talk to you about that stuff. You know, if I can fix it up, I'll kick on with a bit more music because I've got to keep that side of the show going as well. And this one is some ladies, friends of mine in America, and they sent me a Facebook list. They're going to see Brian Wilson, you know, the guy from the Beach Boys. Now, there's a guy that had a lot of problems as well, Teresa. There's a guy that was under the influence of a psychiatrist because you obviously took thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars off him, you know, screwed him up on drugs, gave him the wrong drugs and stuff. And he's come through it. You know, he made beautiful music before that, and he's making great music now. But these two girls in America, they're from Ventura, California, and they're going to see Brian Wilson. And years ago, I wrote a song about Brian Wilson. I wrote it under the way, what happened if he wasn't in California? What happened if he was living in rainy old Wales in Swansea, you know? And he walks up the Mumbles Mile, as we call it, which is in the pouring rain. Would he have written those great surfing songs, happy, sunny songs, you know? So this is the song for the two girls, for Jan and Joanne out there in Ventura. I did say I'm going to play it for him, so I will. It's a song about Frank Wilson and if he lived in Wales. So I'll just put this one on and we'll have a chat after. Thank you very much. Oh, there we are. Then I was doing a song about Mr. Brian Wilson for the girls out there in California. So that was called Mr. Wilson, obviously. And if he was living in Wales, he'd have been, wouldn't mean writing songs about the sand, the California girls. He'd have been writing about those Welsh girls with their Wellingtons and plastic Macs and umbrellas. So there we are, Robert.
Very well, sir.
Is that the ship's dog?
Oh, good God. Give that thing a biscuit.
Is that you?
It's not me, no. It's my dog. I'll go and kick her in a moment.
Oh, good God. No, don't kick her.
Don't go kicking that dog. Cool, yeah.
Oh, lordy, lordy, lordy. So, and I tell you, that was a pretty good song. I really enjoyed that one.
It was very in the much of the style of the Pet Sounds album, you know, which is what I tried to do, really, because Brian wrote that beautiful album. You were booked, Teresa. Is it a paperback, hardback?
You can get it as an e-book. That's been out since February, 2010, February. A paperback since June. So, yeah, if you want to buy the book, it's very easy. The website designed for me was by Shape Rich, Shape Designs there, which is a... Mr. Robert here on GH Radio.
Yeah,
If you go on to my website, which is therusejoyce.com, there's an icon there, Chipmunk Publishing. If you actually click onto that icon, it takes you straight to their website, so you can sort of buy it through that way. But it's on Amazon, Kindle. It's worldwide available, really. If you just Google my name and the book, then you'll find it.
Yeah, really a good book. It is a good
did
book.
Did you get, I wonder, did you get asked to go to, like, you know, to talk about, to do talks on this stuff? Do people want you to come and visit them and do, you know, talk about things? Do you ever get any offers maybe to go overseas or something? Or is there any intention in your life to do that, you know, to go and talk about the book? I mean, there's a couple of, you know, the Hay Festival in obviously, in Hay on Wye, one of the biggest book festivals in the world. I mean, do you ever fancy going down there and you could, or letting them know that this is available and you could go and do talks on it? I mean, do you push yourself in that way? I mean,
It's only been, I guess, since, as I say, June this year. So, it's an option I've got very much open. I have been asked a couple of times if I'm going to the States for book signings or things like that on a couple of interviews. So anyone out there listening, anyone or anywhere, you know, if you put me in the right, put me in the right direction, then, yeah, I'm happy to do whatever will work for people out that need it.
I mean, the Hay Festival is like almost a full, you know, it's a full-time job for the, you know, the time they finish the one, which is I think it's the Guardian, isn't it, that sponsors it. And by the time they finish the one, you know, in June, they've got others going on around the world as well, because they've taken the same concept to South America and Russia. But they then start working on the next one, you know. So, I mean, I would be having a go at that. The guy who runs it is a guy called Peter Florence. He's the director of the Hay Festival. And if you just go on to on Google the Hay on Wye Literary Festival, you know, I'm sure that it's worth a go. I think it's worth a go. And also, down in Larne, in where Dylan Thomas used to live, you know, and wrote some of his stuff, you know, under Milkwood and that, every year they now do a Larne Literary Festival, a 3-day event, and it's worth, you know. I would suggest that you get in touch with these people. They're all on the net, Google, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And be great. I'm sure it would be great, you know, an opportunity for you to go and talk about the book and or maybe be interviewed by one of the Peter Florence or somebody, you know. It's great.
Yeah,
that's a thought, I think. To take you to the next level of, you know, recognition as an author.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that would be a good idea if you did that.
Absolutely. That's the plan.
Yeah, cool. That's great, that is, yeah. So... any plans? Speaking of plans, any plans for another book?
Robert keeps asking me this.
Yes, I do.
At the moment, trying to push the one I've got. But yeah, there is one there that needs to come out, and I'm hoping early next year I could get down to do it, you know. But it's been a bit of a roller coaster ride for me, you know, June, to be honest. So I'm just trying to sort of steady my sea legs just a bit there, Captain, until I can move on to the next one.
Very good. All ship in Bristol fashion.
That's right, yeah.
So they say, didn't they?
Absolutely.
It must be a steep learning curve to be suddenly you're an author. Good heavens,
yeah,
I'm an author.
Yeah.
You know, I got it. What do authors do? What do they do when they get up in the morning? I don't know. What do authors do?
I don't go to bed most nights because I'm interviewing most of my shows are in America. So I was up last night at 4:30. So
Brilliant. Well,
for a sleepful day.
Yeah, that's cool. Just change your clock to American time and pretend you're in America. Sunlight and the darkness.
Should be considered a vampire then.
Yeah, cool. Yeah,
Queen coming up now. Vampires, ooh, don't go there. Do you know that Dracula, speaking of vampires, Count Dracula was actually a guy called Vlad the Third. I know this rubbish. I'm full of rubbish. I know this rubbish. He was a Romanian royal, you know, guy, you know, and he's related to the royal family. And the reason he used to like blood, and why we got Bram Stoker became to write the book Dracula based on this actual guy called Vlad the Third. He killed about 100,000 Turkish people in his day, you know, in the war. And he used to dip his head into a bath of blood off these people, because he's got a medical condition that gives him an iron deficiency. And remarkably, Prince Charles has got the same condition. So Prince Charles is related to Dracula.
Are you kidding me?
I was going to say, where are you getting this information?
I'm a bit of an actor. I just find things and I memorize things, and that is very true. I can't remember the actual medical term. It's too technical for me, but it's an iron deficiency, which the royal family share with Vlad III, who was the inspiration for the book Dracula. Not because he bit into people's necks, you know, as does Drac, as I call him, the mind Drac,
that's right,
but because he used to dip his head, he had to be immersed in the blood of these people that he'd killed, you know. So, interesting subject or not, as case may be. But it's been lovely to talk to you, and I hope that we can have a chat again on another one of Captain Robert's shows. He's the chat show king, and I, you know, I just happen to have this little music show, which I've been thrown into at the deep end of the ocean.
I'll quit you complaining.
Well, as long as I know, I mean, the captain in America, Sea Treasure, I try to work to the second year because, you know, we're very precise in Wales. And I know, you know, I've got one more song to play, and I'm just wondering, you know, the captain in America, that's the vice captain in charge of the vice, obviously, Robert, he has to tell me when I can play this track, which will take us to the end of the show.
Well, you got about 4 minutes starting right now.
He's helping me out a little bit now, Teresa, but he wouldn't have said that. So I'm going to say ta-ta to Teresa. Thank you very, very much for coming on. Let's have the website one more time so people can actually, when they listen to podcasts, they can go to your website. That's the most important thing right now, to read your book and buy your book. So
it's very easy to remember. TeresaJoyce.com.
TeresaJoyce.com.
Yeah, it's spelled TeresaJoyce.com.
Okay. Right. Lovely to talk to Teresa Joyce. And TeresaJoyce.com. And I hope we meet again on air or whatever. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'm going to play a song now. And if we have to tie up a little bit of time at the end, producer Robert, who's done a wonderful job again. And next week, Robert, I think I'm going to set you a challenge.
Okay.
You set me one. I think I should set you, I'm sorry, like Sean Connery. Set you a challenge. A musical challenge next week. Teresa, lovely to talk to you. I'm going to play this track, and if we get to the end of the show with a bit of time left...
Want that $25, don't you?
I want to keep that $25 in your chest, not in your grubby hands over there in America, right? That's lads over here. We need the money more than you.
Okay.
But next week, I'll have worked out how much it is in pounds, shillings, and pence. It's probably worthless $25 to us. You know, it's probably 15 quid.
You guys are all rich.
Nice to talk to you both. If I get you at the end of the show, Robert, I will talk to you again. If not, I'm going to play this song. I recorded this song. It's a traditional Welsh song, and in a different way, by some people from the South Pacific. I recorded it in a backpackers in Australia in the kitchen, and it's a song called Adlan Amor, and from the captain, which is No Star, which is Welsh for good night in America, Prynhawnda, good afternoon. So here's the song by the captain, a traditional song called Adlan Amor, good night, God bless. It's gone very quiet, Robert. I'm not sure what's going on here. Should that song have played?
Shouldn't that song have played?
I'm not sure. Well, it tells me it's playing, actually, but...
You forgot to...
There it is. But it was still an influence. A bit of didgeridoo as well. This is a traditional rock song in a South Pacific style. This is definitely a good night. God bless.
Till next time, my hearties.